ॐ गिरतिमिनन्दस्य जनजनसुलकय चक्षुर्समिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टां स्थापितां येन बुद्धले स्वयं रूपकदा मायां ददति स फलदिकम् वंशकपटुभ्यश्च किवसन्नुभैर्भ्य च प्रतितनं प्रवीणेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः In the 11th chapter of the 7th canto, Amara Yudhisthira, after having heard of the glorious and exalted devotional service of Prahlad Maharaj, asks in the beginning of the chapter how one can attain that, how one can attain devotional service. So Narada begins explaining. And this will take basically to the end of the canto, the process, explaining the process of Varnashrama Dharma, which is set up by Krishna. Varnashrama Dharma is basically a culture. It is the Vedic culture. And in that culture, culture means where something is cultivated. Cultivating culture. They have the same root. Something is cultivated within that culture. Its purpose is to feed something. Like, I remember when I was in high school, there was in biology class, you'd put some mold in a culture of, you'd put something, some agar, some kind of a substance in there. That the mold can grow upon in a petri glass, a petri dish. So you'd get a culture growing there. The different entities of the mold would feed on each other, and they'd grow into something in that culture. It was a cultured environment. So in contemporary culture, although it's not directly spoken of, everyone knows what is being cultivated within that culture. What type of desires, what type of ambitions, what type of hopes, what type of achievements, what's considered a great accomplishment. So basically, what is being cultured is financial success, but even more than that, power. The desire for power. And finances, money, is the root of power. Lakshmi Devi, Shakti, the power of Krishna. Money means power. With power, Ishwaraham, one can control. And then Ishwaraham, aham bhogi, then one can enjoy. So money means power to control. Control means I can enjoy, I can control things, I can get whatever I want, I can manipulate, so I can enjoy. This verse, of course, Ishwaraham aham bhogi siddaham balavan sukhi, comes from the chapter of the Bhagavad Gita entitled The Divine and Demoniac Nature. So this particular mentality is not the divine that's mentioned, but rather it's a demoniac mentality. And that's really, truly what's being cultured, cultivated within contemporary civilization. So what Yudhisthira is asking, what is that that's going not to bring me to this type of a culture which cultivates a demonic mentality, which places me and my enjoyment at the center of existence, as if it was the center of existence. And therefore, it places me in disharmony with everyone else. By definition, because if I'm the center, that means you're not the center. And if you want to be the center, and I want to be the center, that means we're competing. Disharmony. So Yudhisthira is asking, what will culture, what Prahlad Maharaj achieved? So glorious is that. So glorious, so attractive is what Prahlad Maharaj had, even though he was a young boy. He had developed deeply the experience, the devotional mood, which kept him free from all anxiety and brought him the greatest pleasure. So Narada Muni's reply in these chapters is going to speak of an ideal civilization. The perfect society is this chapter 11's title. A civilization wherein people get their material needs met, but in such a way that they are cultivating a divine mentality. So the first thing that Narada Muni explains in his pursuance of this topic is in the seventh verse, when he explains Dharma Mulam. Dharma, of course, really ultimately means that which sustains the living entity, which is the core of his existence, which is inseparable from him. That is actually what Dharma ultimately is. And Dharma is also those activities that are in pursuance of attaining that ultimate. So what is the ultimate? Because the things in pursuance can only be understood in their right perspective when one understands what they're aiming towards. Then the other practices and items are understood as part of the cultivation of that thing, and they won't be misunderstood. So he says, Dharma Mulam, the root of Dharma, he Bhagavan, is certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva Veda Mayo, he's the essence of Vedic knowledge. Hari, it is Hari. He's the essence. This is what the root is. For everything is growing from Hari, from the Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is the root, the purpose of the culture to develop one's relationship with him. And smartam cha ta vidhan rajan yena chatma prasidati. That everything, everyone will be satisfied, prasidati, if they assimilate this root as the essence of their existence. So Prabhupada translates. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities, that which is within what the great authorities remember. O King Yudhisthira, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. So that's the root. And everything in these remaining thing in these chapters should be understood in reference to this root. In other words, their purpose is to develop this relationship with the root, just like if there's a tree, no matter how tall it is, if it's cut off from its root, it's finished. If it's connected to its root, it flourishes. The leaves and branches all flourish when connected to the root. So that's what this civilization does. It connects one to the root. So in the next part following Verses 8 through 12 describe sub-religious principles for everyone, common principles, the ground, the fertile ground of morality, of character, of integrity, that this plant will be, this cultivation in our consciousness will very effectively take place within. So we call them sub-religious principles because they are below the ultimate religious principle, but that doesn't really minimize them because they are born of at least goodness. So when we call them sub-religious, sometimes we throw off as silly, as ridiculous, as insignificant. Things that are ethical principles and these sub-religious principles, but actually they're not to be considered like that, because these, again, goodness is what Krishna consciousness is cultured in. It keeps the mind in a healthy condition, keeps one pure, so that naturally Krishna consciousness will be natural. They are not an end in themselves, but yet they are very important. We cannot take them over Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious principle is to surrender to Krishna, to Krishna's desire. But generally, as Prabhupada told me when I asked about this question, I asked about, he had said that devotees are in the mode of goodness, and this was the first question I asked Prabhupada, one of the first times I saw him at 26 Second Avenue, 1968. And I already thought I knew everything. So I thought, wait a second, Prabhupada said that, Swamiji said that devotees are in the mode of goodness. Devotees are transcendental. We're all transcendental. So I said, Prabhupada, I said, Swamiji said that devotees are in the mode of goodness. I thought they were transcendental. And he replied, yes, but generally they act in the mode of goodness. This is that's what he said. This is the natural, the resting consciousness of a devotee, an actual devotee. It's good. He's a good person. One time Prabhupada was asked, how will one be able to recognize your disciples? What characteristics will they have? What lakshana will they have? And he said, they will be perfect gentlemen. Sometimes we think that we should, being a gentleman or a gentle lady or being good is will get in the way of our devotional service to Krishna, but actually the modes of passion and ignorance get in the way of our devotional service to Krishna. The danger of the mode of goodness is to think that it in and of itself is good, and to be satisfied with that because one feels happiness in goodness. Or in passion, one feels always disrupted and dissatisfied. So the danger is one will take the happiness, the satisfaction that goodness brings over doing what Krishna wants. But aside from that, goodness is the fertile ground in which Krishna consciousness naturally and purely grows. That surrender grows. So Yudhisthira Maharaj was asked, and Narada Muni explain these sub-religious principles, which are quite completely non-sectarian. And then after that, in the next 15 or so verses, he explains the activities and duties of Brahmins, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Sudras. And we'll start reading those. We read 14 last time, verse 14, which is one of the first verses that describe the qualities and activities of a Brahmin, and then the occupational duties of a Brahmin, and then 15. We'll read, which describes the vices. 14 describes the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, something about them, and then Vaishyas in 15, and then it goes on, and then it will describe the duties of women and the mixed castes. So, and that's the end of chapter 12, so we'll read this. This is again how to organize society so that what is cultured or cultivated, having a real culture. If someone is cultured, what does that mean? He goes to the opera only, and then he's a rogue and a rascal the rest of the hours of the day. He likes to go to the museum to see the fine works of art, and he can judge what is good and bad, but he has no character, no integrity. Is that culture, a cultured person? No, a cultured person is one who is has very high character, and he's dutiful, he's doing his duty properly. So I'll read 14 again, just the verse, and then we'll move onward to read the others describing the this Varnashrama culture in brief. For a Brahmana, this is 14, there are 6 occupational duties. A Kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other 5 of these duties. A king or Kshatriya is not allowed to levy taxes on Brahmanas, but he may make his living by levying minimal taxes, customs duties, and penalty fines upon other subjects. Does anyone know the percentage, the Vedic percentage of taxes that are paid? 25%. Yes, there's no graduated income tax system. 25%, straight 25%. That was the system. The mercantile community should always follow the directions of the brahmanas and engage in such occupational duties as agricultural trade and protection of cows. So this is, these topics are also discussed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter. For the sudras, the only duty is to accept a master from a higher social order and engage in his service. As an alternative, a brahmana may also take to the vaishya's occupational duty of agriculture, cow protection, or trade. He may depend on that which he has received without begging. He may beg in the paddy field every day. He may collect paddy. What does paddy mean? It's not a Western term so much. Rice. It's actually, paddy actually means the rice before it's unhusked. At least in Bengali, there are different words for rice in its different stages. So it's, when it's unhusked, it is called paddy. He may collect paddy left in a field by its proprietor, or he may collect food grains left here and there in the shops of grain dealers. These are 4 means of livelihood that may also be adopted by brahmanas. Among these 4, each of them in succession is better than the one preceding it. Prabhupada's short purport. A brahmana is sometimes offered land and cows in charity, and thus for his livelihood he may act in the same way as a vaishya, by cultivating land, giving protection to cows, and trading off his surpluses. A better process, however, is to pick up grains from a field or from a dealer's shop without begging. So why are these better or superior? Because if one takes to business and agriculture, 2 things. One uses one's time. Very time-consuming for the body. But also, it affects the mind because one tends to want to get as much profit as one can. It affects the mind. So a Brahman's mind shouldn't be affected in that way by a profit motive. He has to be very, very liberal because a Brahman is giving. A Brahman gives, a Kshatriya gives, a Vaishya gives. But a Brahman, he gives and doesn't ask anything in return for what he gives. He gives knowledge, he gives direction, and people naturally give him some charity so he can maintain himself, but he doesn't demand that or a price for what he gives. He just gives and depends on Krishna. He gives knowledge. So if his mind is fruitive, he's going to be thinking, what will I take? What will I get? I'll give to this person something because he can give me more. And also, if his body is engaged always in agriculture or whatever like that, then he won't have the time to cultivate the knowledge, to study. And he won't be peaceful. So one is superior to the other. A kshatriya also gives, he'll give his life even to protect someone who depends, who has surrendered to him. But he demands that surrender. You have to subjugate yourself to him before he'll give. You have to acknowledge that he is the Lord, the boss. And you take shelter of him and he'll protect you. He'll give you so much. And a Vaishya gives too. You go into the shop and he'll give you so much. But you can always be sure of one thing. He's getting more than he's giving. That you can always be sure of, because he couldn't remain in business if he's giving more than he's getting. Somehow or another, always he's making a profit, taking more than he's giving. So a Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshatriya all give, but their mentalities are different. So they all have different parts according to one's karma. One has different mentality and they all have different functions. But again, everyone has to perform their functions according to their nature and what they've cultivated to gain that one purpose, gain the root to gain Krishna, Krishna's service. Hari, Dhamman, Mulam, Bhagavan, He. 17. Except in a time of emergency, lower persons should not accept the occupation or duties of those who are higher. So if someone has a Vaishya mentality and he thinks, well, I'd like to be a Brahmin because Brahmins have a higher status in society, so he becomes a Brahmin, but he takes his mentality with him. And then, instead of being very liberal and just giving and actually being in that mood, he'll naturally, because it's his nature, it's the way his mind works, he'll naturally try to take from that position and exploit, take more than he gives. But it can be done. Someone wants to act above his natural position, but in an emergency. Better to progress gradually according to your nature. When there is such an emergency, of course, everyone but the kshatriyas may accept the livelihood, means of livelihood of another, of others. A kshatriya cannot accept work for anyone. There's a story given in the part of the Mahabharata tells how Bhima on Draupadi wanted a 1,000-petaled lotus flower that was so fragrant. She wanted to. There was one that she found, and she, of course, gave that to her husband Yudhisthira, the king. But she wanted one too, so she asked Bhima for it. So Bhima immediately went charging up to the towards the heavens, the mountains. On the Himalayan mountains to get one of these 1,000-petaled lotus flowers. And he came to a lake which was under the dominion of Kuvera, and he saw that these lotus flowers were there, so he began taking them. So there were some yakshas there. Very powerful warriors who said, this is Kuvera's land. This is his lake. And therefore, the lotus flowers that grow on the lake are his. So you can't just take them, but if you want some, you just ask Kuvera, and then if he decides, he will give them to you. He'll fulfill your desires. And Bhima, who was such a kshatriya, had such a kshatriya spirit, because you need this if you're going to protect people, if you're going to be a proper king. You can't be a coward. You need a particular spirit. A nobility, a courage, a fearlessness, a pride. Kshatriyas have, everyone has their pride, and Kshatriyas have a specific pride. So when this yaksha said that you're asking me to beg these flowers from Kuvera? You're asking me to beg? I am a Kshatriya. I'm a warrior. I don't beg from anyone. I take them. And if you want to fight about it, okay, I'm willing to fight over these flowers, but I'm not willing to beg. I'm willing to die or kill thousands of you, but I'm not willing to beg. Ask someone for this. This is Kshatriya spirit. So, it was a big fight. And Bhima annihilated everyone. So Kshatriyas are not allowed to, it's so contrary to their spirit, they are not allowed to accept employment or work for someone. Otherwise, they're useless. So Prabhupada's purport to this verse is very important. Because within the Krishna consciousness movement, as begun by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, Srila Prabhupada awarded the Gayatri Mantra and Brahminical initiation to people who had no idea of what Brahminical culture was before coming in contact with Prabhupada and Krishna consciousness, nor were they born in Brahminical families. So on what authority did Prabhupada do that? Create Brahmanas from people who are not worthy of being Brahmins. So Prabhupada will explain this point in his purport, so we'll read that now. Very important purport. The occupation or duty of a Brahmana should not be accepted by persons in lower social orders, especially Vaishyas and Sudras. So this would mean that we shouldn't be given Brahminical initiation, Prabhupada saying it himself. For example, an occupational duty of the Brahmana is to teach Vedic knowledge. But unless there is an emergency, this professional duty should not be accepted by the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Sudras. Even a Kshatriya cannot accept the duties of a Brahmana unless there is an emergency. And then, even if he does so, he should not accept charity from anyone else. Sometimes Brahmanas protest against our Krishna consciousness movement for creating Brahmanas from Europeans, or in other words, from Malechas and Yavanas, who weren't even Sudras, who don't at all fit into the Vedic culture. And yet Prabhupada, following the example of his Guru Maharaj, awarded them Brahminical initiation. So sometimes those who are born in the Brahminical families in India, they reject this and are highly critical. This movement, however, is here supported in Srimad Bhagavatam. At the present moment, society is in a chaotic condition, and everyone has given up the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, which is especially meant for the Brahmanas. Because spiritual culture has been stopped all over the world, there is now an emergency, and therefore it is now time to train those who are considered lower and condemned so that they may become Brahmanas and take up the work of spiritual progress. Because it's required. Brahminical initiation is required to do deity worship, to study the Shastras deeply, and the Brahminical qualities born of goodness are also required. So due to the emergency situation, the chaos, the spiritual vacuum, this is a dangerous situation, and society is going so down, so dangerously down, so dangerously and quickly down, that it was considered by these great acharyas an emergency time. The spiritual progress of human society has been stopped, and this should be considered an emergency. And I don't think anyone doubts this. Here is solid support from Narada Muni of the movement known as Krishna consciousness. Text 18 to 20. In time of emergency, one may accept any of the various types of professions known as Rita, Amrita, Mritya, Pramrita and Satyanrita. But one should not at any time accept the profession of a dog. The profession of Unchashila, collecting grains from the field, is called Rita. Collecting without begging is called Amrita. Begging grains is called mrita. Tilling the ground is called pramrita. And trade is called satyanrita. Engaging in the service of low-grade persons, whoever, is called svavriti, the profession of the dogs. Specifically, Brahmins and Kshatriyas should not engage in the low and abominable service of Sudras. Brahmanas should be well acquainted with all the Vedic knowledge, and Kshatriyas should be well acquainted with the worship of demigods. So this is in the gradual cultivation of Krishna consciousness, how to arrange society. These principles are very strongly being stated here by Narada Muni in the Bhagavatam. Accepting service. It actually hurts service, meaning that's how it's termed in India. Accepting service means working for someone. It actually is degrading to the consciousness. It takes away a part of the spirit. Prabhupada's short purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.13, and you have to do what they say, because you're working for them, you're employed by them, you have to do what they say, you have to support. If the boss says, this is how it should be done, you have to say, yes, this is how it should be done. He says, this is good, you say, yes sir, this is good. He says, this is bad, oh yes, this is very bad. Am I pleasing you? It naturally puts one in that doggish mentality of trying to please someone who really one shouldn't be trying to please. But yet this is how society has grown. So this is how Kali Yuga progresses. It's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanam Maya Shisham Guna Karma Vibhagasa. The four divisions of human society were created by the Supreme Lord according to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them. Formally, the principles of dividing human society into four sections, beginning Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, were strictly followed. But because of gradual neglect of the Vanashrama principles, Vanasankara population developed, and the entire institution has now been lost. In this age of Kali, practically everyone is Sudra, Kalos Sudra Sambhavaha. And finding anyone who is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is very difficult. Although the Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, it is trying to reestablish the divine Vanashrama institution. Daivi Vanashrama means the divine one. Its purpose is to serve Krishna. Because Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada wanted this, because the society is in such a contaminated, degraded, degrading position. And very, very sad. Out of their compassion, they wanted to establish a culture that would elevate people. So as the Krishna consciousness movement is trying to reestablish a divine Varnashrama institution, for without this division of society, there cannot be peace and prosperity anywhere. So as Prabhupada explained, nowadays everyone is a sudra, so the brahmanas may protest that this person, you've given him brahminical initiation, but he's not born in a brahmana family. But yet in the Mahabharata also there is a discussion between Yudhisthira Maharaj and Nahusha at one point. And Yudhisthira Maharaj asked something about who is a brahman. And Nahusha replied, he was in the form of a snake, he replied that no one in Kali Yuga is a brahman. No one is born a Brahmin in Kali Yuga. The sanskaras aren't there. The parental modes are mixed. There's no breeding. Everyone, nowadays, they think this is old-fashioned, and this is one of the great points that the Westerners rile against about India. They use the caste system. They mean and they feel that that's keeping people down, and maybe in a by the perversion of it, it keeps the upper, so-called upper class people manipulated, control and exploit the lower class people. But this isn't the actual purpose of the Vanashrama system. It's something glorious that's been perverted in Kali Yuga. And how it would be, that perversion began, this was described in the towards the end of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, with the cursing up by the Brahmin boy of Maharaj Prickett. But the caste system, it kept people's modes of material nature very, very, very clear. People who were born in Brahmin families really tended to be Brahmins only, and people who were born in Vaishya families, they tended to have that mood, that business mood. And people who were Kshatriyas, they were really Kshatriyas. That's such a spirit. But it took that type of breeding, practically speaking. And now we think that's horrible. In India, they call two people fall in love and they're married, they call that, or they married a not arranged marriage. There's two kinds of marriages. One's called an arranged marriage, the other one's called a love marriage. Love means you work it out yourself. So just based on that, people get married, and the children, they don't care about this old-fashioned vanashrama system. And they marry of mixed natures, and then the children are half this and half that, and the next generation is an eighth this, half Brahmana, one part this, one part that. And basically everyone becomes very confused who they are and what they should be doing with their lives, because they have so many mixed desires. And this is what's happened in Western society. Everyone's so mixed. Mixed means mixed up. Literally, mixed up. Everyone's mixed up. And I should be doing this, I should be doing that. And if you do one thing, then so many other parts of you aren't satisfied. So it was a glorious system, not meant for exploitation, but meant for simplicity and of spiritual cultivation. As Prabhupada says, without this division of society, there cannot be peace and prosperity anywhere. So what are the symptoms of a Brahmana? The symptoms of a Brahmana are control of the mind, control of the senses, austerity and penance, cleanliness, satisfaction, forgiveness, simplicity, knowledge, mercy, truthfulness, and complete surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Brahmana Lakshanam. If someone isn't good, they can't be peaceful enough to do these things. Their minds are too disturbed. Prabhupada's purport. In the institution of Vanashrama Dharma, the symptoms of a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa are all described. The ultimate aim is achyutatmatvam. To think always of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's that verse, that word is used in this verse. Jnanam daya chutat manatvam. To always accepting oneself. Achyuta atmatvam. The acceptance of oneself as an eternal servant of the Lord of Achyuta. The ultimate aim is achyutatmatvam, to think always of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna or Vishnu. To make advancement in Krishna consciousness, one has to become a Brahmana with the above mentioned symptoms. It's not external, it's not superficial. One has to become moral, good, full of integrity, and then one can renounce that for Krishna if Krishna's desire is otherwise. Otherwise, we're busy renouncing all these points of character and integrity without having them. What kind of renunciation and surrender is that? Just surrender to lower modes. To be influential in battle, unconquerable, patient, challenging, and charitable, to control the bodily necessities, to be forgiving, to be attached to the brahminical nature, and to be always jolly and truthful. These are the symptoms of a Kshatriya. Forgiving again. If someone comes to a Brahmana and says, please forgive me, the Brahmana will say, for what? Because he's tolerant, he doesn't notice it. This is my karma. If someone goes to a Kshatriya and says, please forgive me, he says, yes, because you have asked me, I'm forgiving you. Still a difference in mentality. But yet forgiveness is so important for both. It's character, forgiveness.
23.
Being always devoted to the demigods, the spiritual master, and the supreme Lord Vishnu, endeavoring for advancement in religious principles, economic development, and sense gratification, dharma, artha, and kama, because of the influence of the mode of passion. Believing in the words of the spiritual master and scripture, and always endeavoring with expertise in earning money. These are the symptoms of the Vaishya, passion, ignorance. Offering obeisances to the higher sections of society, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, being always very clean, being free from duplicity, serving one's master, performing sacrifices without uttering mantras, not stealing, always speaking the truth, and giving all protection to the cows and brahmanas. These are the symptoms of the sutra. So very advanced character, high character. Always clean, free from duplicity, no cheating, not stealing, serving one's master. So we can't even rise to the sutra platform easily. Only by the power of the Mahamantra can we do something even. Always speaking the truth. How wonderful. Now in the next five verses, the duties of women are described. Again, the ordering of society so that one has a position, he knows what his duties are, he knows what he should be doing, so that one can offer those to the to Krishna. Yata pravati bhutanam, I'm doing this as an offering to you. Yena savamidam tatam, oh, be pleased with this, O Krishna. Duties of women, 25 through 29. To render service to the husband, to be always favorably disposed towards the husband, to be equally well disposed towards the husband's relatives and friends, and to follow the vows of the husband. These are the four principles to be followed by women. Describe this taste. Prabhupada's purport. It is very important for peaceful household life that a woman follow the vow of her husband. Any disagreement with the husband's vow will disrupt family life. In this regard, Chanakya Pandit gives a very valuable instruction. Dampatyo kalaho nasti tatra shri sayam agataha. When there are no fights between husband and wife, the goddess of fortune automatically comes to the home. A woman's education should be conducted along the lines indicated in this verse. The basic principle for a chaste woman is to be always favorably disposed towards her husband. So this would be very radical. This is not what is being taught. In fact, the women generally hate these principles. Subservience to anyone. No one is supposed to be subservient to anyone. And the husbands are also often rascals, so why should I be subservient to a rascal? In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Srishu dushtasu varshneya jayate vanasankaraha. If the women are polluted, there will be vanasankara population. In modern terms, the vanasankara are the hippies who do not follow any regulative injunctions. So although this system is hard to follow, not following it causes hell to occur within a society. The women don't want to be dependent, they want to be independent, but is the result happiness in society, a peaceful, happy society? They'll think that, oh, to render service to the husband, that's horrible, to always be favorably disposed to the husband, that's horrible, what to speak of towards the husband's relatives and friends, and to follow his vows, be subservient, that's horrible. But look at the result of not following this traditional system. The result is hell. Hell, divorce, ruined children, hellish. It's not the people have become peaceful and free from anxiety and satisfied by the current system at all. In modern terms, the Vanasankara are the hippies who do not follow any regulative injunctions. Another explanation is that when the population is Vanasankara, no one can know who is on what platform. The Vanashrama system scientifically divides society into four Vanas and four Ashrams, but in Vanasankara society, that means that children are basically born out of sex desire only. There is no such distinction,
No one can know who is who. In such a society, no one can distinguish between a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, and a Sudra. For peace and happiness in the material world, the Vanashrama institution must be introduced. The symptoms of one's activities must be defined, and one must be educated accordingly. Then spiritual advancement will automatically be possible. So this is what happens. Everyone is expected to go to school, go to classes, learn the same thing, but so many children have different mentalities. So someone who is academically inclined, they flourish in school. And someone who is not academically inclined, they're tortured, and they end up torturing everyone else and disrupting, causing so much trouble, and that because they're troubled. I remember that clearly from when I was in, especially, it really starts happening in junior high school. I remember that one, after the young boys and girls are 12, 13, 14, 15, like that. There's some young men there who just really should be out fixing cars and things like that. And otherwise they end up causing, that's what, and they end up cutting school and doing the half the time anyway. When they're in there, they're bored and causing trouble and beating everyone else up. That's what I was like. Oh, it's torture. Torture for everyone. But it's based on some liberal, false premise that everyone's the same, but everyone isn't the same. So the point of the Vanashrama system is take the difference of the different natures and let people become that. Don't try to make them into the same as ideal, perfect in that way. Let them, by changing who their actual nature, rather let them become perfect by taking their nature, acknowledging their nature, and using that by performing duties, and therefore they can offer those duties in the service of Krishna. All those people who like mathematics, and they use nowadays you don't have to figure out anything on paper anymore. You're not even required to. Was it like that when you were in school? But they don't even bother anymore. And you know, what they use, what everyone uses, and you're in the tests and the examinations, you're allowed to use something that actually had its origin in Krishna's time, when Krishna was counting his cows. You know how he did it? The groups of cows. What did he use? Anyone know? There were 108 groups of cows, and what did he have? It's something called a manimala. Not money meaning dollars and cents money, but of jewels. He had a set of beads for the 108 beads. And he would count, oh, this group has come, and he'd call them by the names in that group. He would call all the cows, knowing how many would be there. And that was the first calculator. The original calculator. And that's what they use in the schools nowadays. What do you think of that, Graham? Sorry. So, then spiritual advancement. The symptoms of one's activities must be defined, and one must be educated accordingly. Then spiritual advancement will automatically be possible. A chaste woman must dress nicely and decorate herself with golden ornaments for the pleasure of her husband. Always wearing clean and attractive garments, she should sweep and clean the household with water and other liquids so that the entire house is always pure and clean. She should collect the household paraphernalia and keep the house always aromatic with incense and flowers, and must be ready to execute the desires of her husband. Being modest and truthful, controlling her senses, and speaking in sweet words, a chaste woman should engage in the service of her husband with love according to time and circumstance. What a wonderful verse. This one
when everyone should memorize this verse. Next verse. A chaste woman should not be greedy, but satisfied in all circumstances. She must be very expert in handling household affairs and should be fully conversant with religious principles. She should speak pleasingly and truthfully and should be careful and always clean and pure. Thus a chaste woman should engage with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. From Prabhupada's purport. One who is not a devotee, however, is the most fallen and condemned. It is recommended, therefore, that a chaste wife not associate with a fallen husband. A fallen husband is one who is addicted to the four principles of sinful activity, namely illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication. Specifically, if one is not a soul surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is understood to be contaminated. Thus, a chaste woman is not advised to agree to serve such a husband. It is not that a chaste woman should be like a slave while a husband is a naradama, the lowest of men. Although the duties of a woman are different from those of a man, a chaste woman is not meant to serve a fallen husband. If her husband is fallen, it is recommended that she give up his association. Giving up the association of a husband does not mean, however, that a woman should marry again and thus indulge in prostitution. If a chaste woman unfortunately marries a husband who is fallen, she should live separately from him. Similarly, a husband can separate himself from a woman who is not a chaste according to the description of the Shastra. The conclusion is that a husband should be a pure Vaishnava and that a woman should be a chaste wife with all the symptoms described in this regard. Then both of them will be happy and make spiritual progress in Krishna consciousness. So the woman should be ideal and the husband should be ideal, and then if the woman serves and loves her husband who is an ideal and a pure devotee, then everything is wonderful. So this is an ideal situation. So how to adjust life in an unideal situation is not easy, but we should always know what the ideal is, what the, even though we may not be, maybe we can't live up to it, maybe it's not practical for so many different reasons, but we should always know what the ideal is so that when we make adjustments, it's as least far from the ideal as we are, as is possible. But if we don't know what the ideal is, our adjustments will be completely haphazard. So we should know what the ideal is. And if we have to adjust, we should adjust practically, but keeping in mind the ideal and understanding when we move from the ideal, then we lose so much. So therefore we try to minimize in the name of being practical, in the course of actions when we have to be practical, we try to minimize our adjustments, understanding that the further we have to adjust things, we gain maybe in practicality, but we lose. We lose so much too, because the practical system isn't being followed that will naturally bring about the flowering of Krishna consciousness that we all desire. Text 29. The woman who engages in the service of her husband, following strictly in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune, surely returns home back to Godhead with her devotee husband and lives very happily in the Vaikuntha planets. Purport. The faithfulness of the goddess of fortune is the ideal for a chaste woman. The Brahma Samhita 5.29 states or says, Lakshmi sahastra satsam brahma sevyamanam. In the Vaikuntha planets, Lord Vishnu is worshipped by many, many thousands of goddesses of fortune. And in Goloka Vrindavan, Lord Krishna is worshipped by many, many thousands of gopis, all of whom are goddesses of fortune. A woman should serve her husband as faithfully as the goddess of fortune. A man should be an ideal servant of the Lord, and a woman should be an ideal wife like the goddess of fortune. Then both husband and wife will be so faithful and strong that by acting together they will return home back to Godhead without a doubt.
In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya gives this opinion. And then he has written a Sanskrit verse, which means, a woman should think of her husband as the Supreme Lord. Similarly, a disciple should think of the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A sudra should think of a brahmana as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a servant should think of his master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Meaning, not that they are God, but they are, that God's desire is coming through them. So, Shakshad Hari, not different from God, but obviously not God, not the supreme control of the universe, but not different, because the desire of the Lord, like the rain cloud, the rain from the rain cloud comes from the ocean. So it's not different, because the rain is coming from the ocean. The rain cloud is the ocean in one sense, but yet it's obviously not that, doesn't possess the totality of water that the ocean possesses. In this way, all of them will automatically become devotees of the Lord. It's a very nice point. When one thinks of one's master, one's husband, one's spiritual master, one's thinking of Krishna. And then by thinking of Krishna, one is a devotee. In other words, by thinking this way, all of them will become Krishna conscious. Then the next verses, 30 through 34, speak about the duties of mixed castes. Among the mixed classes known as Sankaras, those who are not thieves, are known as Ati Vasayi, or Chandalas, dog eaters, and they also have the hereditary customs, traditional customs. My dear king, Brahmanas, well conversant in Vedic knowledge, have given their verdict, that in every age, Yuga, the conduct of different sections of people according to their material modes of nature is auspicious both in this life and after death. So one should follow Shastra according to the modes of material nature. The Shastras, the different scriptures, give duties, occupational duties, practical duties for people according to their modes of nature. And one should follow those and then make progress. It will bring auspiciousness in this life and the next. Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita 3:35, it is said, Shrayan Svadharma Vigunat Paradamat Svanustitat. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though they may be faulty, than another's duties. The antyajas, the men of the lower classes, are accustomed to stealing, drinking, and illicit sex. But that is not considered sinful. For example, if a tiger kills a man, this is not sinful, but if a man kills another man, this is considered sinful and the killer is hanged. What is a daily affair amongst the animals is a sinful act in human society. Thus, according to the symptoms of higher and lower sections of society, there are different varieties of occupational duties. According to the experts in Vedic knowledge, these duties are prescribed in terms of the age concerned. Different yugas, different modes of material nature, different ages. If one acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the nishkam stage. Prabhupada's purport. If one gradually gives up his hereditary customs and duties and tries to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his natural position, he is gradually able to become free from these activities and he attains the stage of nishkam, freedom from material desires. My dear king, if an agricultural field is cultivated again and again, the power of its production decreases, and whatever seeds are sown there are lost. Just as drops of ghee on a fire never extinguish the fire, but a flood of ghee will, similarly, overindulgence in lusty desires mitigates such desires entirely. So, the example is given, this is explaining why the lower classes are allowed to engage in sinful activities, even though there are sinful activities. It's even recommended that they engage in them in a sense. Just as an agricultural field, if the same cultivated activity goes on and on and on, the seeds that are in there won't bring any results. So similarly, if one engages in a flood of these activities, given that opportunity, one will lose the desire. That is the principle. Prabhupada's purport. If one continuously sprinkles drops of ghee on a fire, the fire will not be extinguished. But if one suddenly puts a lump of ghee on a fire, the fire may possibly be extinguished entirely. Similarly, those who are too sinful and have been thus born in lower classes are allowed to enjoy sinful activities fully. For thus there is a chance that these activities will become detestful to them and they will get the opportunity to be purified. So again, the purpose isn't enjoyment, but it's renunciation. And it is for, this principle is applied for sinful personalities. And the final verse in this chapter, a very important verse. Yasya lakshanam proktam pumso vana vivyanjakam yaranyatra pidrisyeta tatenaiva venirdishet. If one shows the symptoms of being a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, as described above, the symptoms, lakshanam, the symptoms, if one shows these symptoms, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. So this is a very important verse, again, for that point, if one can become a Brahmana, even if one is not born in that Brahmin family, in a Brahmin family. But he has to have or develop those symptoms that were mentioned. Purport. Herein it is clearly stated by Narada Muni that one should not be accepted as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra according to birth. So of course in the West this isn't a major point, but in India it's a very important point, very controversial. For although this is going on now, it is not accepted by the Shastra. If one is born in a Brahmana family, but has the qualities, characteristics, activities of a low-class person, he's not considered a Brahmana, according to Narada Muni. It's guna karma of a Bhagavad, the qualities and activities, not janma karma, not by birth. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chatur Varnam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma of a Bhagavad. Thus the four divisions of society, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra, are to be ascertained according to qualities and activities. If one was born in a Brahmana family and has acquired the Brahminical qualifications, he is to be accepted as a Brahmana. Otherwise, he should be considered a Brahma Bandhu. Similarly, if a Sudra acquires the qualities of a Brahmana, although he was born in a Sudra family, he is not a Sudra. Because he has developed the qualities of a Brahmana, he should be accepted as a Brahmana. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant to develop these Brahminical qualities. Regardless of the community in which one was born, if one develops the qualities of a Brahmana, he should be accepted as a Brahmana, and he then may be offered the order of sannyas. Unless one is qualified in terms of the Brahminical symptoms, one cannot take sannyas. In designating a person a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, birth is not the essential symptom. This understanding is very important. Here in Narada Muni distinctly says that one may be accepted according to the caste of his birth if one has the corresponding qualifications. But otherwise he should not. One who has attained the qualifications of a Brahmana, regardless of where he was born, should be accepted as a Brahmana. Similarly, if one has developed the qualities of a Sudra or a Chandal, regardless of where he was born, he should be accepted in terms of those symptoms. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Perfect Society for Social Classes. So, thank you very much. Tomorrow, Krishna willing, we'll continue with chapter 12. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Narada Muni Yudhisthira Maharaja ki jai.